Welcome. I'm Dr. Dawn Gross, and this is Dying to Talk, a special series on KALW, tackling taboos around death and dying. As a doctor who specializes in caring for people with life-altering and life-threatening illnesses, a lot of what I get to do is listen. And an amazing thing happens. When we're given a chance to reflect on our own mortality, what matters most rises to the top, and everything else simply falls away. And while it may seem counterintuitive, the same thing is possible even in the wake of grief. In the next hour, we're going to hear how losing a generation of grandparents opened the door to discovering legacy and purpose in a way that was previously hidden from sight. Joining me in studio is KALW's own Rose Aguilar. Station listeners know her as the journalist and longtime radio host of the weekday morning news and current events live program, Your Call. What listeners may not know is that Rose has recently experienced profound loss over a very short period of time. She describes losing her grandparents as the first personal encounter with death as an adult. And rather unexpectedly, this loss of a generation in her family has emboldened her in a new way to explore her own heritage and how she honors the legacy of her family. Rose Aguilar, welcome to Dying to Talk.
Hi, Dawn. Thank you for inviting me.
It's my pleasure. Now, you've said that these deaths have opened your eyes in a new way and had you think about your grandparents, their lives, and your own differently. I wonder if you could share with us.
Well, as you said, I never have experienced death personally until my grandparents passed, and I've always felt so lucky to still have three grandparents. My grandfather on my mom's side passed when I was much younger, and I don't remember it that closely. And so, you know, as an adult, I would talk to friends and they'd say, oh yeah, I've got a grandparent, but they live on the East Coast and I don't see them very often. And I thought, wow, I have three grandparents within an hour's drive from me. I feel really lucky. And my grandparents on my father's side were well into their 90s. My grandma on my mom's side didn't have a birth certificate, so we never really knew how old she was, and sometimes her age changed depending on what she wanted to share. But, you know, I just feel really lucky that I had them up until a late age. And you know that when people are going into their 90s, they're eventually going to pass. Yeah. And so, you know, it was really obviously very sad on many levels. I mean, to see my mom deal with my grandma's death was really hard. But also, on the other hand, wow, they had long lives. They've seen so much. And they have gone through so much. And so it's a strange thing. It's like, on one hand, you're really sad. But on the other hand, you're so happy that they were able to live such long lives. It's not like they died a tragic death. So it's just I've just been thinking a lot about that lately. And also, to sort of, in some ways, feel odd that you can recognize that, well, it's their time to go.
Yeah.
And also, do you want someone to live in pain and not be able to get up from the chair after 95 years, right? So it just brings up so many different things when it's an older person who's dying.
Yeah.
Now, if they were in their 60s, it would be a completely different experience. Or if it was like a parent, for example, in their 60s, it would be a very different experience.
And so you said watching your mom experience this loss for her has been very difficult. And have you talked about that with her and what that's been like?
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard to see my mom. My mom and I are really close. We talk every day. Mm. And it was very hard to watch her lose her mother. Mm. And I just sort of wondered when she was going to come out of it, and we would talk about it, but that was even hard. And all of a sudden, one day, things just sort of started to get a little better.
And since then, has the type of conversation you've had around end of life changed?
My mom and I have always been comfortable talking about it. And it actually makes death not so scary when you talk about it. So that's been kind of nice. And actually, I was just visiting my mom yesterday, and on our dining room table, there's a photo of my grandma with a cup and a plate and fresh flowers. And so she's always there when we're having dinner or just sitting at the table.
Uh-huh.
And she always puts a cookie or fresh water, coffee, and fresh flowers every day out for my grandma. It's kind of a tradition in the family.
And so is that something that other families around you, something you've grown up doing, not just your own family?
Or No. Just side
yours.
Of the family, yeah. that side of the family has a lot of really great and interesting traditions that most people don't
have.
Yeah.
But specifically around honoring people that have been a part of our family and then have died.
Yes.
And keeping them present.
Right.
In a very real way.
Yes.
Do you find trying to weave that into your life now, has it changed the way that you reflect on what's important to you and what are the values that you carry forward from them?
Very much so. This has been such a journey for me. I'm the product of divorce. And, you know, thinking about doing your show today, we don't talk about divorce very much at all, mm-hmm. about how it affects kids. I mean, my parents divorced when I was 12, and it still affects me to this day. You still wonder, what would I be like if my parents were still together? And so as the child of divorce, you get pulled in different directions. Mm-hmm. And so I got pulled in different directions, and then you ultimately feel bad because you're not with the other side of the family on holidays, and you feel like they're mad at you as a child. And so that stays with you well into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And then if you have bad relationships with family members, that stays with you also into adulthood. And after the death of my grandparents, I realized that exploring certain aspects of family can be disconnected from that feeling, that those negative feelings or those bad feelings. It can be really about what you're trying to get out of it. It doesn't have to be like a bad relationship with a parent, right? So that's been really... that's been a good experience to know that I can dive into the background and it doesn't have to bring up those bad feelings or those sad feelings. It can be actually a positive experience. And luckily, that's been what it's like for me.
Which you found
so. Been, yeah.
That your overall background, the heritage, your legacy, your ancestors is not necessarily completely wrapped in the relationship of your family.
Exactly.
And so learning sort of, or getting permission, even being released from that to
right.
go discover. So what have you done?
Well, I don't really talk about this publicly, but so Black Lives Matter has me really looking at African Americans and blacks and really respecting people for saying, you know what, I'm black and I'm proud of where I come from. And when you walk around when you're black, everyone knows you're black. Well, when I walk around, people think I'm maybe Latina, Mexican. I mean, I've even had listeners write in and say, why don't you pronounce your last name with an accent? And I write back and say, well, do you think I'm Mexican? I'm not Mexican. That's why. And it's interesting how people think they can sort of tell you how you should say your name. So my grandparents are Native American. And I've even had people on social media say, why don't you use Indian? Well, they used both. It really didn't matter to them.
Uh-huh.
On my grandma's side, they're Gypsy, which people say, why don't you use Roma? And I said, well, they use Gypsy, although there are so many stereotypes about Gypsies. People
don't know.
Don't, right.
Yeah.
People don't even know that Gypsies live in the United States. So I come from a unique background. I'm probably the only one with these Native American and Gypsy background for various reasons. And so it's really caused me to sort of say, yeah, this is something I should be proud of. As a child, I was made fun of. Native American, can you make it rain? Gypsy, can your mom see through a crystal ball? It's something that you just want to leave behind.
Yeah.
And so this has also caused me to sort of be proud about it and really do. I mean, I love research.
Yes.
And so to really dive in and do research about where I come from. And that's been an amazing experience. Talk to my mom about her background and the Native American side, the things that my mom learned. It's just been a really great experience.
And so what was the shift? Because it sounds like you were already a curious person naturally, already talking with your family, as you do with all sorts of people, learning about them. But then something switched after they died. And again, maybe it was this sort of separation, as you're talking about, of the relationship of your childhood to the broader connection to your whole family.
I think it was just thinking about them, learning about what they went through, and thinking about how far we have come, how far I have come. And to have a radio show as an independent woman, you know, I have a lot of oppression on both sides of my family. And so to embrace that and to respect that and to want to talk more about that. I mean, on the Native American side, I was reading recently Current Magazine, which is a newspaper about public radio. And I saw this graphic about the different backgrounds of people who work at National Public Radio. And usually Native Americans are missing from these graphics. It's usually Black, Asian, and Latino. Well, this time they did include Native Americans. And so they looked at how much of the population is white, Black, Asian, Latino, and Native American. Only 1% of the population is Native American. Zero Native Americans work for National Public Radio. Zero. Not even one. And so I see these things, and I look at Black Lives Matter and thinking, wow, look what they're doing. They're changing the conversation. They are, you know, raising so much awareness about everything from slavery to lynching to racism to police brutality. And Latinos, in some ways, are doing that. And people from other cultures are doing that, not so much with Native Americans. Native Americans are not in the media. Native Americans are not on talk shows. A lot of people don't even know Native Americans. And so I just thought, you know what? I think it's time for me to talk about this and just sort of come out as a, quote, Native American journalist and bring these issues to the table. Now, I love – KALW is amazing because – there's such a breadth of information on the show, but on your call, we talk about Native American issues on a regular basis. And that's why it's important to have diversity in the media, because we all bring our backgrounds to the table. And I just feel like I want to do that in a deeper way and be sort of out about it.
What do you think your grandparents would think about this now with your sort of really taking this on proudly, openly, boldly, even?
Well, at my grandmother's ceremony, celebration ceremony, I gave a little speech about wanting to really embrace the past. Because so my grandmother was Pomo from Northern California. And, you know, she comes from a lineage of only 1,200 people. And so that's, I come from basically 1,200 people on that side of the family. And a lot of people that I never met before came up to me after that and said, thank you for saying this. Thank you for speaking. This is something that some of us don't want to talk about, but we need to talk about. And so that felt really good. And I met a lot of people, and I'm learning so much more about where she comes from, where my great grandmother comes from. She was a well-known basket maker in Northern California. There's a high school named after her in Santa Rosa, Elsie Allen High. And so I've just been diving in and read. There's a book about her, Remember Your Relations by Susan Billy. And so I've just been diving in and reading about all of these issues and learning so much. And, you know, the other thing is, it's never too late to learn about where you come from. That's the one thing that has come out of this for me. I ask a lot of questions because of what I do, but before my grandparents passed, I made it a point to ask them questions. I have no regrets about that. Even if you're 55 or 60 and you have not asked your mother or your aunt, it's just never too late. And I think that we need to spend more time talking about that. And, you know, for a lot of people, they don't have good relationships with parents or grandparents. And it's hard for people to go to that place. But I say, you know, do it for yourself. If anything, for selfish reasons. I remember my friend in high school lost her dad at a young age, and she said, I really regret not learning more about him. So for selfish reasons, just make sure you learn about your parents or your grandparents or any other relative. Just do it for yourself. So when they pass, you don't have regrets. And I think that's really important.
I think that is really important. You're listening to Rose Aguilar here on Dying to Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Dawn Gross, and we're talking about what opportunities may arise actually in the wake of death that sometimes we think we have missed. And Rose is graciously sharing a very personal loss of losing really a generation of grandparents in a very short period of time. And I wonder, as a journalist, so we've just talked about on a personal level, saying, you know, for selfish reasons, to learn about yourself, ask questions. But also as a journalist now, you know, you are talking about taking on issues in a different way and more publicly. And you recently went to the Dakota Pipeline. And I wonder, again, with these recent losses and your new eyes, in a sense, how you're noticing that's informing the types of questions you're asking and answers you're wanting to get.
Well, I decided to go to North Dakota as a journalist to see what was happening, but then to also go continue this journey. And, you know, I feel like those of us who are lucky enough to have the microphone have a responsibility to give a voice to people who don't have the microphone, but to also, you know, go deeper and ask questions and be bold enough to say, for example, for Native Americans, you know, why is it that we don't talk more about it? Why is it that we don't talk about genocide? Why is it that we don't have more museums? Why do we have Columbus statues in many parts of the country still? And so going to Standing Rock was really amazing because I met people from so many different tribes who were there really on their own journey. I met one man, probably in his 50s, who was adopted and was not raised on a reservation, doesn't really know much about his Native American side. And his wife said, you need to go there to find out who you are and to explore your roots. I met the great-great-great-granddaughter of Sitting Bull. And she said, up until this happened, we never talked about our connection to Sitting Bull. There was just, we just didn't go there, and now we are, and we're going to be proud about it. Yeah. I met a woman who grew up on a reservation that's about 2 hours from the Standing Rock Reservation, and her tribe, in her words, have sold the tribe out because they're working with the oil companies. And she said, I'm one of the only members of my tribe who's speaking out about this. I'm being ostracized. And my friends are not happy with me because the tribe's getting a check every month, and I'm going to stand up. I met a young man who grew up on a reservation in is growing up on a reservation in, I believe it was somewhere in North Dakota, but it's a very impoverished reservation like so many are. And he said, on our reservation, we have drugs, alcohol, and suicide. And yet so many of us are artists and we can't find jobs. And so I brought my brothers here to find purpose. Okay. Standing Rock is getting a lot of attention because Amy Goodman from Democracy Now! Was arrested, and she is going to turn, or not arrested, there was a warrant out for her arrest. She's turning herself in on Monday. Okay, that's really important. The people are getting arrested at the pipeline. That's really important. I feel like the human side of this is not really being told. And all these people from around the country, New Mexico, I met a woman who was just leaving to go back to Alaska. People from Venezuela are just arriving. That human side is not really getting as much attention. And that is the story that needs to be told. And that's the story that I want to tell. People are going to this camp that it's 40 degrees. That's really cold for someone from California. They're going to stay there through the winter. It's going to be below zero in this camp. And so I just feel a responsibility to share these stories and to ask these questions and to talk about this history. I don't think we can really move forward in this country until we come to terms with and acknowledge Native American genocide. And I love the work that Black Lives Matter is doing because we are talking about, we just did a show about the new museum in Washington, D.C. There's a slavery museum right outside of New Orleans. There's going to be a new museum opening in Alabama about lynching. And I think that's fantastic. But I think we can't really come to terms with all of that until we come to terms with Native American genocide. And so I feel like I have a microphone and I want to use it to go there and, you know, give a voice to people who are talking about it. There are so many books that have come out in the last 2 years. And so I'm actually working on an oral history project about Native American elders. So I think all of these things are happening at the same time. And it's kind of intense, but it's also exciting because I feel like things are really shifting and people really want this information. So that's the positive that's come out of all of this.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
We're going to take a short break. We're going to invite our listeners to come join this conversation. And when we come back, I want to touch on some ritual you had mentioned very quickly in passing, the expression of acknowledging your grandparents' death as celebration. So when we come back, I want to talk about that.
If you'd like to join the conversation on Dying to Talk, the phone lines are open. Just call 1-866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email Dr. Dawn Gross at Dawn, D-A-W-N, at dyingtotalkradio.com. You can find resources related to this conversation at kalw.org. Once again, that the phone lines are open, and that phone number is 866-798-8255. Let's go back now to Dying to Talk.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Dawn Gross, and this is Dying to Talk. I'm sitting here with Rose Aguilar. We're talking about the impact of losing specifically grandparents, but anyone close to us, and how that at some point can actually feel like an opening to discover more about who we are, where we come from, and our purpose in life. And before the break, you had mentioned, Rose, some aspect of honoring your grandparents and the community coming together in celebration. And in many cultures, we talk about coming together as a funeral, as mourning, and yet it's very specific in the Native American culture you shared with me that that's not the case. Can you share with us what happens?
Well, I mean, everyone has different celebrations and traditions, but the funeral word, I've never really liked that word. And so we use celebration. And then on my mom's side, Serbian gypsy side, it's more like a 3-day, all-day celebration. And it's not just going to a church and sitting down and listening to someone speak. It's just a massive gathering of family getting together and celebrating life with lots of pictures, lots of her favorite things, things she liked to eat, things that she just enjoyed over the course of her life, putting those on tables and just, you know, getting together for 3 days of celebration. And then, like I said, having a picture on a table with a cup for water or coffee, and then a plate for food or a cookie, and then fresh flowers just to sort of acknowledge her. And it's sort of for her. It's these are the flowers she liked. In fact, yesterday my mom said, "Oh, there's some pretty flowers. I'm going to go get that out for Ma." It's just something that we do. It's just something I've grown up with.
And that's ongoing. It's not that there's a specific window of time.
They don't know, actually. It's because it's all oral history. Uh-huh. My mom's language is spoken but not written, and so it's all oral history. And so some people say after a year, but they're not really sure. And I think it's up to just each individual person. But it's also been kind of amazing to learn more about my grandma. I said that she didn't have a birth certificate. She was actually born in a caravan. We don't know where. Somewhere on the Canadian U.S. border in the East Coast. My mom's always funny because she says, "I hope Grandma was born in Canada because I really would like to get health care from Canada." We're not sure where. And then they traveled along to the West Coast. And they were stopped along the border on the way out here. So it was like from San Francisco to Sausalito, the officials would stop them. The officials in San Francisco would call Sausalito and say, "They're coming. You know, they're coming in their caravan." And so then when they got to Sausalito, they would be stopped and say, "Okay, you've got 24 hours and then you have to leave." And so they ultimately ended up in Northern California, but they worked in the farms on their way here, and they were farm workers, and they just got seasonal work on their way. And it was, I just really learned about this recently, the farm worker aspect of it. So it's been really amazing just to learn more. I mean, we don't really know much about Serbian gypsies. There's just not much out there. And the gypsies were killed in the Holocaust. We don't talk about that at all. Yeah. In fact, I remember going to the Holocaust Museum in D.C. about 10 maybe more years ago. And there's basically a plaque on the wall that says, oh, and by the way, the gypsies were killed. And that's it. Mm. I mean, on Holocaust Remembrance Day, gypsies are not mentioned. They don't have, we don't have a museum. We don't have a flag. Mm. I mean, we have food and a language. We don't have a country. So it's just something that is not talked about. On NPR a couple of years ago, this filmmaker's name escapes me, but this man is he did a documentary about gypsies killed in the Holocaust, and even the number of gypsies killed in the Holocaust is up for debate. There's just not much information out there. And once again, it's because there aren't gypsies
to talk
in the media, journalists, not many professors, people and authors, people, you know, who have influence in society. So that's why this information is not really discussed.
I'm curious, you know, as distinct from Native American, where land and burial, to my understanding, is very prescribed, sacred, ritualized, given that gypsies, as you're talking about, on caravan, moving, what happens when someone dies?
Well, it's a very, it's all very private. It's something that they like to keep close to them. So it's not something that is shared.
It's shared.
Yeah.
And so as you think about your own death and sharing both of these worlds and imagining, you know, the beautiful thing about ritual, the opportunity is to learn and take from all sorts of cultures, whether it's what you're born with or what you learn about. And you're born with very rich traditions, and you also live in a community filled with all sorts of traditions that we can learn about.
That's not really discussed.
That's,
I mean,
discussed.
When you think about, you know, shows that focus on ritual or people who are sharing their stories, writing memoirs, making films, it's every other culture but these, right? So, I mean, that's another reason why I said, you know, I think I just want to spend more time putting this out there. I think it's really important. And maybe also giving people the, I don't know, courage. Maybe they need to also do the same.
Do you think ritual, however you look at it, whether very personally, internally, or communally, does that help you reevaluate your life now and into the future? Do you?
Yeah, I mean, it's made me think a lot about my mom and what she has overcome in her life. And I mean, a lot of these things are still very uncomfortable to talk about, but just how, what she has accomplished in her life and her mission to send her children to college and to let us fly, you know, in that side of the family, it's still very uncomfortable to talk about. Let's just say she had a really hard upbringing. She had to make a lot of decisions that were incredibly difficult to make in her family. But she wanted to have educated children who made their own decisions. And she did that. And so it's really made me think a lot about what she has overcome. I think she's listening right now. Hi, Mom. thank you for everything. I mean, she's sacrificed so much in her life. And so it's just kind of the death of my grandparents has made that so much more clear. And it's intense to think about. But to think about, where my grandmother came from and then to think about where I am today, just in two generations, so much has changed.
Yeah.
And really, a lot of this is really thanks to my mom.
I want to remind our listeners that we would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what your experiences have been if you've lost a grandparent, how that has changed the way you look at your own life and perhaps your children's and the legacy that you want to instill in them. If you have rituals around end of life that your family has taught you or that you've created yourself. We'd love to hear your stories. So you can give us
And can I add one question?
Oh, please.
I think also if you have really learned about where you come from as a result of death, and if you have, maybe that was not something you wanted to talk about before because of maybe divorce or a bad relationship with a parent or something, but then after the death, if you started asking questions and learned more about where you come from, I think that would be really interesting to hear about.
Yeah. So you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. And as you say that, I certainly look for myself. While my own heritage, I'm Jewish, was something that I knew, and the rituals that we practice around end of life were something that I was raised learning, practicing it, didn't really occur until my own father died. And coming very close to that and embracing it and wanting to become more curious and understand and coming to really appreciate the wisdom of these rituals for me when life is so changed. Upside down and backwards is one of my friend's children's examples, and you're walking tilted in the night that you just don't know which way is up. And to have certain prescribed things of this is what's going to happen and this is how your community is going to show up for you until you can find your footing. And as you said, then having new permission to talk with family members, and my own relationship with my mother changed pretty dramatically after my father's death, and what we could talk about in our own lives in the anticipation of our own deaths. And it's unexpected. Uh-huh. Even in my work where I care for people at the end of life, that was an unexpected shift. Uh-huh. And having that sort of light go on and a whole new world open up. So given that your mom is listening, I wonder, has she shared with you, you know, her hopes and dreams for you now as these new conversations have evolved for you?
She's very supportive. We had a recent conversation about both sides of the family, and she just shared a lot about what she knows. In fact, she said, it's so strange because I know more about the Native American side in terms of the past than I do about the Gypsy side, because again, it's all oral. We just don't have documentation. But we both said, okay, this is going to be our new mission. We're going to try to find these answers and figure out more about where exactly the great-great-grandparents were born. Great-great-great. We don't know because it's such a moving society. And, I want to do more research about gypsies and the Holocaust. And I just think that's so, so important, especially as I keep thinking right now about people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that's why I want to do this oral history project about Native elders, because we're losing this amazing generation of people right now. The American Indian movement, the women's movement, just people who grew up around Martin Luther King. I mean, we're losing this generation, and it needs to be on paper. I just think that's so, so important. And I think we're moving so fast with social media, and we need to slow down and have conversations like the ones you're having and learn more about this past. And like, that's why I did all these interviews at Standing Rock with older people about who they are, where they come from. I mean, a great, great, great granddaughter of Sitting Bull.
Yeah.
These people are going to be gone in the next 20 years. This is rich, rich history. So yeah, I'm excited to try to learn more about it. And I want to get in touch with that documentary filmmaker and find out what he learned about gypsies who were killed in the Holocaust.
Where do you think you begin? I mean, in addition to talking with him, do you go back? Do you travel to the country and just start knocking on doors? Or
I don't know about that. I mean, that would be huge. I think it's just trying to find distant relatives who maybe have different answers and then talking to him and seeing what happens. I mean, there's some information that I have found online, but not that much.
So I think we have a caller here. Rob from San Francisco is asking about the difference between Black Lives Matter violence and indigenous people celebrating. Is Rob here?
Yes, good
Welcome, morning. Rob. Good morning. Welcome to Dying to Talk.
Rob. Well, thank you so much for the show. And Rose, I followed your work. Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Really appreciate you utilizing your platform here. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, just make one suggestion. And, you know, it's probably not as pertinent for this audience, but you know, I just wanted to express some concern for overall praise and possible alignment of your movement with the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, the Standing Rock, I've just been amazed at how nonviolent and peaceful that protest has been conducted and continued, and to you know, make a comparison or even offer the support from the Black Lives Matter movement, I'm afraid, does not show this this movement in the proper light, since the BLM movement has openly called for and celebrated violence against police, violence against property, and violence against innocent whites.
We've done a lot of shows about Black Lives Matter, and never once has anyone condoned violence against police. So, and Black Lives Matter actually traveled to Standing Rock to express solidarity with the indigenous people there.
I was aware of that, and yes, the corporate figureheads, you know, maintain the fine line that they don't condone that violence. But the reality of it is, the events become protests. There's significant property damage. There's significant violence against other people that happen to get caught up in it, innocent bystanders, and that's what is condoned. And then, yes, the corporate figureheads or the Black Lives Matter figureheads and mouthpieces maintain a very clean line that they don't condone it. Meanwhile, they allow it to happen, and it's all typically a result of almost every single event. So it's you know, they're talking out of both sides.
Rob, thank you for sharing this, and we certainly here are focusing on how to have heritage and our ancestors inspire us to know who we are and where we can go from here. We're going to take another call here from Elle in Palo Alto, who wants to share about transitions in death and dying. Oh, Elle, we've lost Elle. I'm sorry. Well, we were going to talk with Elle, I think, about death and dying and the transition process. And I wonder, you started this conversation in the beginning sharing sort of the state that your grandparents were in, and two of them being in their 90s. So this anticipation of death is on the horizon. It's not a surprise. And I wonder if there were things that were changing just in how you were being with them, as compared to, say, when they were 80 or 70, and if there was anything specific that got discussed, saying, what do you want to make sure we do?
You know, we'd never really talked about death, interestingly enough. It was just conversation, just asking questions, talking about family. my grandma on my mom's side, she wasn't able to move very much toward the end of life. She watched a lot of TV and a lot of news, and so we had great conversations about politics, and she had some very choice words for the presidential candidates. You know, it's really interesting because growing up, because I wasn't sort of 100%, I wasn't accepted into the family as a child, but getting older, things really shifted. And my grandma just completely... her whole attitude about life really, in my mind, shifted. And so we had these great conversations about politics. And she said, you know, don't bother getting married. You know, have someone in your life. And, I mean, they're very conservative when it comes to children and marriage and all of those issues. Really conservative about that. But she said, don't bother getting married. Have a partner. Don't have children. It's too much work. She had... 7 children and raised many more. And she said, live your life, travel the world, see the world. You know, you love what you do. I mean, this was amazing to hear from my grandma. So we got really close as I got older. And, you know, you learn to forgive. I mean, people have culture. They know a certain way, and that's the only way. And then she, you know, later in life, she really came around and was one of my biggest cheerleaders. So that was incredible. In fact, when I went on a road trip in 2005 to the so-called red states to interview people in conservative parts of the country, I called her almost every night to tell her what I was doing. And she said, keep doing it. I mean, until the day she left us, she always said, live your life. I want you to have a partner, but don't get married. Don't have children. It's too much work. Because she knew what it was like. I mean, she gave up her life. I mean, she worked so hard to raise her own children plus other children. So it was amazing to see her sort of modernize, right, in quotes.
In her own lifetime very quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. And maybe not with role models around her to inspire her to do that. Yeah.
She didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing is I have a choice. In two generations, that much changed.
Yeah.
I mean, she got married at a very young age. They still have arranged marriages. And she didn't have choices. Luckily, she did toward the end of her life, you know, middle-aged and later. But that was so amazing to see, is she kind of embraced that independence. Go for it. That was great. In fact, I remember on one Mother's Day, we were all getting together, and I said, Grandma, do you ever regret having children? And she said, yes. And a few of my aunts got kind of upset and hurt, and my mom said, of course she does. Look at what she's had to deal with. Look at what she's done in her life. This woman has worked so hard. And so that was kind of, that was amazing to hear.
We have an email here from Alicia Carter, and she writes, I want to appreciate Rose for advising people to ask their grandparents about their background before they pass. She says that my 96-year-old mother died recently. I'm sorry to hear that. And although I did talk to her a lot about her heritage, what's arising for me now is lots of questions I wished I'd asked her before, about her feelings growing up, what you're talking about, Rose, her marriage, having eight children.
Wow.
The more personal stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I asked my grandma, do you ever regret having children? I mean, we don't ask those questions. And it's okay if someone says yes, right? I mean, my mom said, yeah, celebrate this. Who doesn't wonder what their lives would be like maybe if they took a different path? And so it's those kinds of questions. I mean, just talking with her about, I mean, the election, Grandma, what do you think about this candidate? I mean, those kinds of things, those are the memories that I have that I love. Not so much, life was so hard, Grandma, when you were working on the farm, but it was more, what do you think now? All these changes you've seen over your life, you know, seeing your granddaughter hosting a radio show and traveling around the country and interviewing people and then writing a book. What is this like for you, Grandma?
We have a call here from Rich in San Francisco wanting to ask you, Rose, about some of your background. Rich, are you there?
I am here.
Rich, yes. Welcome. Good morning to Dying to Talk.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for today's show. And Rose, I think like so many people, I'm a big fan. Your show and all the good work you do is just a breath of fresh air, particularly given how low our politics have gone in the United States these days. My question is pretty simple. I'm just wondering, the work you talk about doing on your Native American heritage, but also the other side of your family, what hope do you have in terms of what impact you would like to see it have on young people? Some of the history is really tough to learn, but it strikes me as someone who's understood a lot of these issues as being a student of history for a long time, that there can also be a really positive effect. Could you speak to what your hope is in that regard?
Well, yes. Thank you for that question. You know, recently on the show, I had Benjamin Madley as a guest. He's a professor at UCLA, and he wrote a book called An American Genocide, and it's about Native Americans in California. And I shared my story with him afterwards, and he has done so much research, 10 years of research about what happened just in California, and he's got about 180 pages of specific information about the deaths of Native Americans, the killings of Native Americans in California. And it was really intense to read this book because I learned about the Pomo side. I mean, they were brutally killed. Again, I come from a lineage of 1,200 people. And I said, Benjamin, you know, this is a journey for me, and I'm thinking about sort of coming out as a Native American journalist. And he said, Rose, please do this. The students need to hear it from you. Native American young people need to hear your story. And they need to see a role model and see that there is a Native American woman on the radio talking about everything from nuclear weapons to the issue we're talking about today. And so, you know, I think that's really important, especially I've been thinking a lot also, I'm a first generation college graduate, first person on both sides of the family to go to college. And so I think it's important to also speak openly about that for people who, you know, don't have family members who've gone to college. For young Native Americans, like I said, at Standing Rock, I met a young man who talked about drugs and alcohol on the reservation, and he said, the young people on my reservation have no hope. There's no jobs. He said, it's hard enough to get a job in the city where I live, let alone on the reservation. And so, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge the past. I don't think you can really move forward until you acknowledge the past. Yeah. And so on many levels, when you have a death in the family, to acknowledge where you come from, even if it's tough, in order to move forward, I think that's so, so important. And then to acknowledge, you know, Native American genocide. I don't think we can move forward as a country until we acknowledge that. And so it's really sad, but it's also empowering. I mean, as hard as it is to do these shows, you know, to read these books about genocide, it's actually not as hard as I thought it would be. If anything, it's like, okay, we have this on paper now. We have this documented. This is a fact. This has happened. Let's acknowledge it. Let's talk about it. And then figure out reconciliation and figure out how we can heal from it. So I think that's important, too.
Absolutely. I think listening to you talk about the connection between the generations on a personal level as well as then on a community level, locally, and then really broadly, nationally, and perhaps internationally, one could move this conversation as you talk about the Holocaust, that the opportunity in any time we look at what's so, and death is something that happens, the opportunity to heal from that. We can't bring the person back the way they were. We know that's currently not possible. Maybe Google will change that someday, but right now, we can't do that. We can heal. And I think going toward what's difficult and learning, internalizing it, and then moving it into the future with what we've learned, not necessarily repeating it, but taking from it what is whole and true and owning it, and then creating a new vision for it.
Right. And I think that's also important to talk about with young people, is to say that your story matters and where you come from matters. Even if you're living on a reservation with dire and unacceptable poverty, you need to speak out about this. And also tell the story not just about the poverty, because that's the other thing I talked about at Standing Rock is, yes, there's poverty and suicide, but there's so much more. And so I think that's really important. But the healing process is very important. We talk about these issues sometimes from an academic perspective, but I think it's important to step back and say, okay, what about the trauma and then the healing? What does that look like? You know, because I saw that with my mom. How do you heal? Because I think that what happened was the passing of my grandma. It's sort of your life flashes in front of you. And I think that happened with my mom. And so it took her a while to figure out how to heal from that. And I think that's so important, and let people just go to that ugly place, that dark place. And it has an effect on everybody else. But allow it to happen, and eventually you come out of it. But I think talking about it and acknowledging it is so, so important. So it's a huge process. But talking about, in this case, the genocide, and then what it takes to heal.
And I would argue it's actually a lifelong process, the process of grieving. And when you talk about coming out of it, it's not that and I'm putting words in your mouth, it's not that your mom is now back to where she was. It's an integration mm-hmm. of this new part of her life and creating a new normal, a new path forward.
Right.
And that's true for all of these aspects of our life, and that death takes many forms. You talked about divorce. There's a form of death in that. It's a death of a relationship, mm-hmm. right? And in each of these ways, there's a story there to go back to the story and then weave it into our lives
right.
and then bring those threads forward and create new stories.
Right. And also I would say it can feel overwhelming for a lot of people, especially if they don't have a good relationship with certain members of the family, if there's trauma that happened in a childhood. I'd say just take little steps, even a phone call. You know, we all put things off. Oh, I'll call them tomorrow. And then next week happens. And then next month happens. So just take a small step. Maybe on a Sunday night, call if a family member lives far away, or if not, schedule a lunch or whatever, and just ask even simple questions. Questions that maybe, what's your best memory in the last 10 years? Or as a child, what do you remember? What do you remember about when life was slower, Grandma, when we didn't have cell phones, and, maybe a black and white TV? What was life like back then? What do you remember as a young girl?
Yeah.
I asked a lot of those questions, and I'm glad that I don't have many regrets. Mm. Of course, we all have regrets that we didn't spend more time. I think that's everyone. But I don't really have that many regrets of, I didn't ask this.
Yeah.
It's just even simple questions. It doesn't have to be so deep.
Right.
And I feel like when we take that journey, this is going to be really deep. But it doesn't have to be.
No.
It can just be very simple and casual, and the simplest questions result in really profound and surprising answers.
I think that's a perfect way. It's a perfect way to close. Thank you, Rose. My guest this hour has been journalist and radio host, KALW's own host of Your Call, Rose Aguilar. Thank you so much for being here. Your courage in sharing your past with us and really taking a stand for who you are, your voice in the world, and the future that you're going to bring to all of us. I'm so grateful.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I actually now want to do a show about this, but thank you for taking these issues on. I think it's so, so important that we actually talk about death and end-of-life issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to thank our listeners, everyone who called or emailed us during today's program. It really is your curiosity that makes this conversation possible. And the more we talk, really, the more that matters is what's going to show up for us. Dying to Talk is produced in the studios of KALW in San Francisco. Barbara McVeigh is the in-studio producer, and Eric Wayne is at the controls. Matt Martin is our advising producer, and Ashley Ann Krigbaum created the promos. All of the music for Dying to Talk is by the Oakland-based band The Kilbanes. You can't wait to share this. Please know you can go to the Dying to Talk page on KALW.org and share this resource, as well as sign up to join our live audience taping of Dying to Talk on October 29th. I'm Dr. Dawn Gross, inviting you to be curious, ask questions, and never settle. Or, as a hospice patient once taught me, life is uncertain. Better eat dessert first. Rose, celebrating 20 years of vegan deliciousness, we're heading to Millennium for a vegan chocolate tour.